Throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
Early call time. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Yeah.
JJ couldn't make it here today. My name is Nadav. Andrew is here.
Hey.
And we have a special guest. Another person I went to high school with, Mr. Jonathan Clark.
Hello.
I'm amazed that you haven't, like, I feel like you would have burned a lot more bridges in high school. You've had a successful run of...
These are all the success stories of my high school career.
He paid me to be here.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, paying him in...
How much are you getting?
In hamburgers.
Oh.
He's getting hamburgers.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
But like a lot of hamburgers.
It's a lot. It's
like
a lot.
Enough hamburgers to pay rent. If your landlord accepted hamburgers.
Yes.
Hey, John.
Maybe.
Hey, John. What do you do, bud?
Thanks for having me, first and foremost.
Yeah, thanks for being
here. So happy to be here.
Yeah.
I work at a talent agency who represents film composers and music supervisors. Film composers working on Hollywood films, television shows, video games, commercials, etc.
So anytime that someone needs a film composer or a music composer for anything, really.
Any and all musical needs
for your film project. Your agency is the agency.
That is it. It's a one-stop shop.
And what do you do at that agency?
Currently, I'm an assistant. I've been an assistant there for 4 years now.
Okay.
But I recently have begun representing my own baby composer client.
Oh,
which
shit.
Which is very exciting.
Cool. Congratulations. Yeah. I actually did not know that.
Yeah, working my way up slowly but surely.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been there for 4 years. How did you get this job?
It was just like most jobs in this business. It's who you know. Mm-hmm. And I had a connection at Disney at the time, and a friend of a friend who knew someone at the agency who was leaving at the time. So I sent my resume over. It passed a couple of hands, and all of a sudden I get called for an interview.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is history. Was there ever since. I nailed it.
So what was it like? Have you done any of like assisting in the industry before, or is this the first time you're actually doing like an industry job?
This was my first real paid position.
Okay.
I had done a lot of internships beforehand. I was in school from 2006 to 2010, mm-hmm. and every summer I'd come home and I worked A&R over at Sony for a little bit. Go Slugs, yes. UC Santa Cruz. I came home and I would do, you know, 3 months of 2 months of A&R work at Sony. I worked at a management company, you know, a tour management company. So I had my fingers in the business enough so that my resume was beefy enough to entice Kraft Engel, my company now. So.
And you're a big music guy to begin with.
I am, yeah. I was in a band for years. I'm a guitar player.
Oh, you were actually in a band with one of our other podcast guests.
With Jordan Baum. Indeed.
What was the name of your guys' band?
It was called Plaid Nature Music.
There it is.
Mm.
Why'd you guys call yourselves that?
It was our three favorite things in the whole wide world.
Plaid, nature,
and music. And music.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you ever play in Silver Lake? Because that feels like a...
We should have, but we didn't.
Oh.
No. We weren't... No,
A lot of Sunset Strip shows. No big deal.
Yeah. Santa Barbara, Santa Cruz, you know.
Ooh.
So I do have a musical background, yeah. So it was all, it's all fitting.
So did you know you just wanted to do something in music? Like were you like, yeah, man, I'm going to be the next Red Hot Chili Peppers? Or, no, fuck it, I'm going to represent someone, Red Hot Chili Peppers, after they start making music for movies.
I didn't really know at the time. I knew I was going to be happiest if I was doing something music related.
Mm-hmm.
And the band was always... you know, an outlet for that, and that I love creating, but it's really nice to work in this environment with creatives when I'm just kind of overseeing or helping, or, you know, it's fun to see the process now. And film composing just is, it's a whole other beast. I mean, writing music, picking up a guitar and writing a song,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's step one, but seeing how these guys really do it is something different.
Have you been in a session while they're doing it?
I have, yeah.
Whoa, can you tell us what that's like?
Yeah, I've seen writing.
Like you've just walked into the room. Like, what do you know before walking into the room with them? And then what's the first step in setting that up?
Well, typically there's, you know, a composer's going to get hired on a film, let's say, just whatever film, whatever composer, they get hired for, let's say it's a horror genre.
Okay.
And
you guys have all these horror composers or something?
Yeah, we
or?
Have guys who are, you know, specific for the horror genre, sure.
Okay.
And let's say they get the gig, work out the negotiations, that's our job.
Mm-hmm.
All the while, the composer holds himself away in his studio, writes, you know, 30 minutes, 50 minutes of music, whatever the movie requires, in connection with the director, they're collaborating, they're spitting ideas back and forth. And then about
so the director's in the session too.
They're all a part of the creative process. It's right. Their vision, the studio, whatever studio is involved. You know, they'll have a music department they chime into. It's just the composer has to really appease all different parties at once for what they think they need for the film.
What happens if
best suit the film?
What happens if all those people like don't have a background in music at all, and the composer's like,
that happens a lot.
You all are fucking idiots.
They probably never have a background in music.
They rarely do, and the composer has to smile and nod and be the yes man a lot of the time, and find a happy medium for all parties to really come together and say, oh, that's what I want. It's the composer's job to come in and really show them this is the score you need and make everyone happy.
Right.
Take a bunch of different directions and put it together. So, for 6 to 8 weeks, the composer's kind of holed away in his studio writing for this film to picture. Mm-hmm. Playbacks are happening with the director. People are sitting and, they have constant revisions and rewrites based on whatever the needs are.
So he's not alone by himself for 8 weeks doing stuff and then, he brings the first draft 8 weeks later.
There's
involved throughout the process.
Yeah, and every composer has a team of, assistants and underlings and, there's tech people that are a part of it,
How many people work under a composer? Like, depends. If you hire a composer, how many people are you actually hiring on?
It depends. Our agency represents, some pretty A-level guys. Let's say one of our biggest would be Danny Elfman, for example. And on his scores, he requires quite a bit. There are programmers and, MIDI takedowns and mock-up guys and, Pro Tool operators, orchestrators. It's the whole shebang. Conductors for when they're actually on stage because he doesn't
conduct.
It's a whole
bunch of musicians, too.
And then the musicians that come with it. Yeah. Let's say it's a 50-piece orchestra recording with the London Symphony Orchestra at Abbey Road. Someone to book the sessions, someone to fly everyone out, set everything up over there, and it's a whole process. And that's
when they're getting notes though. I mean, I don't know if how much tweaking they can do. Like you get a huge orchestra of people in and they'll, lay something down and then, people are watching and they're going, "Oh, we like it, but we want to kind of tweak this a little bit." Like do you have to then go back and bring everybody back in again? And
the tweaking will happen before it gets to the orchestral recording. So let's say he is recording a piece for a 50-60 piece
orchestra.
Kind
of a temp,
the tweaks are all happening ahead of time. There's synth mock-ups where it's not real instruments. He's kind of just writing via Pro Tools or whatever the program is.
Someone's just using a MIDI keyboard.
Exactly. And he's laying down all the parts, layers upon layers of texture, music, sound design. It's all incorporated. And before they record, they hash out all the whatever.
So no matter what, it's going to sound way better because
before they record.
Not,
yeah.
As soon as
the recording, the live recordings happen, everyone has said, yes, thumbs up. This is what I want. So there's no real revision unless there's some reshoots, which are out of the composer's hands, after the fact, if the studio sees the film, hates it, wants to add 10 minutes of an end scene or edit the end scene entirely, then we have to revisit that. But for the most part, it's by the time the recording's happening, everyone's given their approval.
Nice. And at what point is the composer called in? Like, is it even in the pre-production process? Is it during production, post-production?
It's a post-production thing, mostly, unless there's a relationship, again, like the Danny Elfman reference. He and Tim Burton have collaborated on, I think, 16 films now over course of, two decades. Yeah. So, or more than that. But, typically if there's a relationship there, they'll come in ahead of time, read a script, the composer and the director will talk about the director will, share his vision of the film and what he thinks the music may need, he or she. And the composer, will write themes, think about it ahead of time, and when the time is right, play ball when it's in post. But it's mostly a post-production endeavor.
What do notes on something like that look like? Because I imagine, you hear network notes for like a director's cut on a TV show or something, and it's like, we want to see more of this angle or more of that. But with music, I imagine it's a lot more...
I'm sure it's vague.
When I did my film, it was like I was talking to the composer, I'm like, you don't even know how to say
it. We need it more chirpy. Can you make it more chirpy?
It's a lot of made-up adjectives.
Right.
And it's how the composer kind of interprets it. And it's really bizarre. And we at the agency have this issue too. We're in charge of making submission reels for a project. So let's say before a composer's even hired...
What's a submission reel?
Before a composer's even hired, like a music supervisor or one of the heads of music at a studio, let's say, will give us a call and say, "Hey, I got this new movie coming out 2016. It's an action adventure fantasy drama.
Okay.
And I need thematic sweeping orchestral, but I also need a little bit of a hybrid electronic-y button pushy disco tech elements."
Holy crap.
And then we kind of have to make a reel of 15 to 20 tracks for whatever composer they think they need and try to make that work based on their past work. So I'll pull from, let's just use Danny Elfman again as a reference, I'll pull from his past scores from Nightmare Before Christmas or Alice in Wonderland's tracks based on the description we get and try to fit. It's fitting like a peg into like a circle hole because it really.
It's like if you hammer hard enough, it might fit.
Kind of, yeah. And we're just kind of, you know, throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing if it sticks.
Are you giving them actual the visuals, like the actual cuts of the film,
no,
or is it just the
just
audio?
Audio? It's okay. Just audio. I think the new wave of submission reels will probably be to audio at some point, or to audio to picture at some point, because mm-hmm. that really helps those who aren't as musically inclined to really see right. what...
See how it fits.
Yeah, right. exactly. To see what it works, how it works against picture.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen... a director do like an a cappella thing for a composer, like
oh, that's amazing.
I was thinking of having something like a do 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 do, like, and the composer is just like digging his face into his palm, like oh.
I've heard horror stories about that from composers. I've never witnessed it firsthand, but some
directors. Before we get into that, let's still get into some more details about your job before we get into the
sure, 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 sure.
You've been working there for 4 years. Mm-hmm. Why don't you describe your first day and like what your responsibilities were on day one versus what they are today?
That's sure. an excellent question.
Thanks,
yeah,
Andrew.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, day one was I was actually hired as the receptionist at first. So it is the typical
working on up.
So you had to wear a dress? Is that?
Not a dress, but I was embarrassed
Andrew,
multiple
that's very
times
anti-feminist.
Otherwise.
I don't.
Right. So you had to wear a dress or?
No dresses, thankfully. Oh. No, it's casual Friday every day.
Hope some
there,
social so. Justice warriors dox nice. You.
Bring it on, Reddit.
Andrew Zuber. There he is.
reception duties, you know, answering phones and handling paperwork, internal boring stuff that really no one wants to care about, but you have to because someone has to do it. A lot of the reel making you learn how to do at the reception desk. So during the day, you're answering calls, you're helping the assistants, you're making lists, you're tracking projects. So I'm
what do you mean helping the assistants?
Like you're
like printing out labels and stuff or
yeah,
like
whatever they may need, helping them with the reel making. You know, that's okay. Typically that falls on the receptionist.
Okay.
Interesting.
They'll work in conjunction. We'll work together. You know, it's like a team effort over there. There's just seven of us at the company. So it's very, very boutique. Not your typical Hollywood agency. So it's an all for one mentality. Mm-hmm. We're all helping each other for the greater cause of getting our clients a job. So,
it's one receptionist and then like three assistants.
Well, I'll start from the top sure. down. So it's two partners. Okay. It's Richard Kraft and Laura Engel compiling Kraft Engel.
Right.
We have a junior agent, Sarah Kovacs. She's developing new talent, new composing talent. Mm-hmm. There's myself. I assist Laura. There's Dan, who you know well, actually, mm-hmm. too. Dan assists Richard.
Yeah, Dano. I know him.
Yeah, know him well. A good buddy of ours. And Matt, our receptionist. And then David Klein, who's our office manager, who does he's like the chief office guy, and he handles invoices and collecting money and paying the bills, that kind of stuff.
Accounts payable.
Nice.
Accounts payable and receivable.
HR?
And receivable. Yeah. And HR, yeah. He wears many hats. So that, and it's
first
really...
Aid.
Huh?
And a nurse, office nurse.
He's the medic when we need to. Yeah, I cut my finger.
He has a Band-Aid.
He heals my boo-boos.
Kisses owies.
Yes, he does, yes. it really is like, you know, it's all for one there. It's we all share responsibilities and, you know.
Yeah, there's no snooty attitudes because it's so small. It's just like, hey, man.
There's no room
just,
for it.
Yeah, we're just trying to make something work.
There's no time, yeah. And we all, you know, everyone has a passion for the music. And the composers we have, you know, we have about 42 on our roster at the moment, and they're all so unique and talented in their own way, and they're all such nice people. Like, we have male composers, female composers, no prima donnas whatsoever.
That's awesome.
It's not like an actor. I don't know. I can't speak for the CAAs or the William Morris's Endeavors, like the big agencies, but yeah. I'm sure it's a much different vibe. I know it is. I mean, I know people who work over there and assistants who are there, and it's they're beating their heads against the wall trying to climb that corporate ladder. But here, it's very much, you know, it's a very family friendly environment.
It's so, they're trying to like bring people that are interested and then work them up, build them up.
Right. It's a unique spin on what, you know, people don't typically think of our kind of agency when they think of a Hollywood agency. Mm-hmm. But it really is, it's not, you know, no entourage elements. I mean, everyone has an ego, of course,
right.
And you know, the agents have to have that gusto and a bit of that Ari Gold flair, of course, but,
A little fuck you, pay me attitude.
A little bit. Yeah, you got to. I mean, hey, that's their job. So they're you know, hunting for money and jobs for their clients, and,
right.
and they do it well. They're certainly one of the best. I mean, if you look at the numbers at the end of the year, you know, our agency is right up there with some of the big boys of, you know, we always have some of the most films, the widest span of composers on films, you know.
Yeah.
There are other composer agencies that are specific composer agencies like us, mm-hmm. and we're always, you know, top of the list of in terms of how many clients, like the sheer volume of work.
Yeah, how usually, like, whenever I hear of something awesome happening at the Bowl with a composer, you're like, oh yeah, my my agency's like got like a shitload of tickets to that if you want to go.
Yeah, there's always
like Jaren.
fun perks. Yeah, fun little perks like that. Yeah.
Okay, so you started off as a receptionist. How did you make that jump from receptionist to assistant?
The assistant ahead of me got fired.
Oh, so nice. What did they do to get fired?
Cha-ching. They were just not very good at their job.
Okay.
And it was, yeah.
That will get you fired.
It was a slow train wreck. And you know, and we like to promote from within. So obviously when you're, like I said, the all for one attitude means that, you know, the receptionist has to kind of have their hand in what the assistants are doing on a daily basis.
So that when they make the transition.
Exactly. So when the transition happens, it's seamless.
Okay.
So 9 months after getting hired in 2010, I became Laura's assistant. Just really, it was like the next day, the guy got fired. The next day I was in the hot seat. Mm-hmm. And the first thing she said to me was, I need you to be a machine for me. Can you do that? And I said yes, ma'am.
That's so intimidating.
Yeah, it was the very, like, that Ari Gold, like, you got to fucking do this.
It's like, I need you to check your feelings and emotions at the door. I just need you to do.
Yes, yes. You are certainly a yes man as an assistant.
That's amazing. Okay.
But, and it's been, you know, 3.5 years since that. And it's been, you know, it's been great. Smooth sailing.
Been hanging in there.
I am. Yeah, I have my ups and downs like we all do. But it's a great job, and I'm certainly learning a lot about being an agent, which has now led me to slowly start developing my own up-and-coming talents.
Yeah, that's crazy, dude. Yeah. Tell me about that. So tell me about how – so you made the jump from receptionist to assistant.
Yeah.
And now from assistant, how was it that now they're like, hey, John, you want to represent this person, or did you bring it –
No, I had to kind of beat them over the head about it a couple times. I had been poking them and prodding them. I'd been working with someone quietly on the side as to not interrupt my work, my day-to-day with the agency. Mm-hmm. I had just kind of been helping in a managerial role, helping this up-and-coming composer of mine. His name is Sebastian Canobesque. Mm-hmm. He's an assistant for
another. Already.
Is that the guy that you sent me?
I sent you something else.
Okay.
But he's great. He's an assistant for a composer that we don't represent, actually, ironically enough. But through mutual friends, he and I connected. He sent me some of his work, and I was blown away. He's fantastic. So I said, I have to work with you. I have to help you. Because I like to think that I have a pretty good ear now for music and for what
sells and what doesn't.
For what would sell. And it's a mix of the right personality, the right attitude, and good music. And he has all three. So I'm very excited to be working with him, and I really hope I can propel him in some way. But yeah, I mean, the daily assistant life, though, just to go back to the initial question of what I do. So it was the reception duties of the general office, the mundane office, paperwork, answering phones, you know, filing away. It's a huge, like, terabytes of music, a huge database of all of our composers' scores and past work and submissions that we have to keep track of all of it.
Yeah.
And that's all the receptionist's job. So it really is more than just a receptionist. It's organization. It's like the lifeblood of the office. It's where the projects, you know, we learn about new projects. They track different studios, what they're up for, what they're on, what scripts are in development. You know, it really is
actually doing like a lot of research.
It's a lot of research. Yeah. I mean, that's where, you know,
that's awesome how involved it is.
That's where it starts. I mean, that's how we know what to do. That's how the assistants know where to call and what's hot and what's in post. And hey, this project doesn't have a composer. We should call this director. Or hey, this director worked with this composer.
How do you find that out? Like, do they say that like in an article on Variety, or is it like, oh, hey, I have this buddy that I'm at a Christmas party and he's...
It's a little bit, it's both. I mean, it's who you know. I mean, we all know, you know, IMDb Pro is a huge reference point. I mean, that's like our Bible in terms of what's happening and what's in development and what's coming out.
Okay.
So that's really where we go first. And then Variety, Hollywood Reporter, we track. We have a ton of insider articles and websites that we read and research and... That's where we get our reference. And
do you have like a proud moment where you brought something to the table and they're like, yeah, all right, we'll do that. And
yeah, when it. I was actually 6 months into the job, I was still at the reception desk and I was still learning how to make a reel and how to really what the process is to present that, because it's you know, putting the right tracks in the right place, and you want to make sure that, you know, it's got to be ear catching right away. It really has to grab the listener, especially someone who might not know music very well or the composer at all.
It's like making a good mixtape.
It's making a good mixtape for someone who doesn't know what the hell they're doing.
Right.
So I was just 6 months in. I was still pretty green, and there's a composer on our roster who is up for a horror thriller, just for example. And it was my job to make the reel because I was at reception. So I went through.
And so that, like, they let you pick the songs and everything?
Someone approves it. I mean, the assistant at the time was overseeing me you know, watching me do this because he knew the work a little bit better than I did.
Okay.
Made the reel based on some past scores of our client. I put it all together. It was sent off for submission. And a week later, we get a call. Part of the assistant's job is they roll calls with the agents. So they're typing out, they're dictating all of the conversations.
Oh, okay.
So the receptionist will take those and then put them in a database so we track all the actions of for each project and what's happening on a project-to-project basis.
Gotcha.
So I was receptionist. The next day, I read the note that was rolled by the assistant that says, hey, we really loved that reel that was sent to us the other day by such and such client. We really want to hire them on this project. You know, and then it was deal terms and it was deal points. Sick. And then all of a sudden, it was like a little pat on the back because I had a hand in helping that client get a film.
That's amazing.
So that's one of those like little victories that you have to hang your hat on because you really don't get a lot of praise at that desk, but it's those small
like
little...
Like I did something.
Like, yeah, you had a little hand in helping that client get a job, and that's what it's all about. So that was, you know, it's those little things that really keep you sane at the job, for sure.
Right. Sense of accomplishment.
It's the small, yeah, we...
I imagine if you hated it the entire time, it would be less rewarding.
Yeah, very much, yeah, definitely. But, and the assistants, you know, we'll all like high five each other, like, "Hey, good job," because you know we don't get that anywhere else. So it's on us to like pat each other on the back and like help each other. We're in the trenches together. Yeah, but it's that kind of stuff that's like, you know, that's what I live for. I love that. I love helping the clients because they're so talented, and some of them are now they're friends of mine now because I've just been working with them so intimately for so long that, you know, I know their work like the back of my hand. And
yeah, you get like Korean barbecue with Danny Elfman and like.
Not
Mansell.
I can't go. You know, I don't want to divulge too much about that. But
it's like ramen with John
vegan.
Williams,
he's right? Vegan, gluten free.
Right. So so small little victories. That's
sweet.
Talk more about Korean barbecue.
It's delicious.
Well,
let's do our Korean barbecue segment.
Well, beef bulgogi is usually my go-to. The brisket bulgogi.
Mm. Oh, nice.
Then beef belly is a.
I love beef belly.
It's kind of like bacon, but from beef.
Yeah,
and it's nice. It's like really thin.
Getting hungry.
Mm. Oh, yeah, we're going to eat after this, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Andrew, you're not invited.
I didn't want to go.
what was the question where I asked you something and then we went back to that? Is it how you brought the guy that you found, the baby composer?
Oh, right.
How you brought them to the agency? Like, so what did that conversation
say? Is he literally a baby or how does that work?
He's 27. So in composer in composer terminology, yes, that is certainly a baby.
How old is the average composer?
Oh, it depends. I mean, you know, John Williams is, you know, he's certainly up there, but he's been doing it forever. You know, to get really successful, you know, unless you're lucky, I mean, there's one in a million that gets there.
So step one in being a good composer is being frail, being old and frail.
And very pale. Yeah, not a lot of sun. But it depends. I mean, it varies. You know, people in their 40s, you know, are still kind of trying to figure it out and cement themselves. So it really depends on stylistically what you're trying to do and who you know. And, you know, there's no rhyme or reason to that. But so the baby composer, though, to answer your question, I met with him, loved his work, thought the personality was, you know, exactly what he needs to exude in meetings. And, you know, he really has that. So I think he has what it takes. So I would subtly play his work in the office. And it's a very open environment. We're all kind of like, we can all hear each other's, you know, we scream at each other all day.
Oh, so God, like, is everyone just playing different music on each stage?
Sometimes.
What a nightmare.
Yes, God bless headphones. But I make a point of when my boss comes in, I'll kind of turn up his track a little bit.
Nice.
When she's walking by me and she'd be like, a couple times she's been like, who is that? That's pretty good. And then I'd say, this is
Soundgarden.
Yeah.
How tactical.
Yeah, so, and just, you know, planting little seeds. Maybe a composer of ours will need...
Did you say Soundgarden?
Yes.
No, it's not Soundgarden. you know, there was one instance where a composer of ours was on a television series and he needed some help. It was like a deadline that he was just not going to be able to make on his own. He had another movie he was working on at the time and he was just slammed with work. And he came to us for some assistance. He said, who else do you know? Any other composers who can help me ghostwrite and write some tracks for me. And I suggested Sebastian, my baby client, to Laura. And she said, play me some of his stuff. I did. And she said, send it to our composer and see what he thinks. I did. And he really liked it. I set the two up and it worked really well. So
it's amazing.
Nice.
Small little, again, the little victories. So like the tiny little baby steps to get her to acknowledge his presence, know who he is actually.
Right.
And then at the end of the year, just in December, just a month ago, I sat down with them before the holidays and I said, I would really like to start officially representing him as a composer, chase real jobs for him and not just, you know, these little tidbits here and there for our clients. I really want to develop his career. Mm-hmm. And they said, go for it. So
that's, nice. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's a great, yeah. And that's, you know, that's, it's really exciting. I don't know if I want to be an agent in the end game for me, but it's a really, I certainly have the repertoire and the vernacular to do that. So
you're building a base.
I'm building a foundation for myself slowly, but, yeah, it's the standard like Hollywood success story of just like grinding and grinding until you finally get that little glimpse of something.
Yeah.
And that's my little glimpse of something is this composer, Sebastian. So
takes 8 years to become an overnight success.
Yeah. Well, in my case, 4. So
there you go.
And by no means am I a success at all. That's underlined in bold and italicized that.
You took the bus here, right?
I walked.
Oh.
Yeah. I woke up at 6:30 and started jogging.
Started walking uphill.
Yeah.
Do you want to do something in music, though, ultimately, or?
I do. Yeah, I still have that drive. There's still a creative drive in me.
Where's the finish line for you?
It's yet to be seen.
Okay.
I don't know yet.
You've got to figure it out.
At some point.
We're not leaving this room.
And so we'll be here for a while. I'm going to need another donut shop coffee.
Do you want
here.
More coffee?
And at some point, maybe. But
there's the
giraffe. No, I'm good. But end goal-wise, I don't know. I'm kind of an open book at the moment. I don't have a set direction yet. I know something with music would certainly, that would scratch the itch of you know, in terms of my career.
Mm-hmm. Would you ever consider going into composing?
That's a whole other beast. I mean, that you got to go to school for, I mean, there's, it's way too, I'm amazed by composers every day because it's so intricate. It's so involved. It's so technical. Mm-hmm. And it requires knowledge of so many, not only electronic-based technical stuff like the Pro Tools, which I know nothing about. I really don't know anything about that. Mm-hmm. And then also knowing, you know, knowledge of all these different instruments and what may work for, you know, whatever the case.
Right. It's like, do we want a regular bass or a tenor bass?
It's such a vast knowledge of music, and I'm in awe of them every day, which is why I love doing what I do. But to do it myself is, I don't think so. I mean, people go to school for that and learn it for years and still never get it right. So tough thing to pick up, that's for sure. You kind of got to know early on that you want to be a composer.
Okay, so follow-up question to that. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about, like, musicians? Like, for example, Trent Reznor is the first person that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. That make the transition from being, like, a rock star musician to being like, I'm going to give this film composing a chance.
That's a big trend these days with scores.
Are any of those types of, like, people your clients?
Yeah, we represent a few. We represent the Crystal Method.
Okay.
Nice.
Who you probably know from their electronic music,
right?
Of course. Very popular, very big, and old school. They've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Just now, recently, trying to really break into the film scene. They've scored a television series in the past, and they have some film scores under their belts, but they would be, in my eyes, they're that quote-unquote baby composer of really trying to now reinvent themselves as – they still do the electronic music and they still tour and they're still an artist in that sense. But to make the transition to composing, you know, it's a slow process and it's tough. But they're certainly – they're doing that now. And the Trent Reznor example is great because, you know, he's been paired with a guy named Atticus Ross, and that's where they, you know, they won the Oscar for Social Network
years ago. That soundtrack was amazing.
A brilliant score. Brilliant score. Really good. And Trent is amazing.
Excuse me, I said soundtrack. That's the wrong word, right?
It's a score.
A score. Yeah. Soundtrack is like songs that they like license, and that's
right.
They sell that on the soundtrack.
Right, right.
But they also put the score on the soundtrack.
There's a score soundtrack too. That is a thing. Right.
Okay.
That is a thing.
Okay, so I wasn't completely wrong.
No, you're not. No, I will tell you when you're wrong.
I'm not, you're
good so far. So far, so good.
I'm well rounded.
But yeah, there's a really big trend now in having artists become composers. I mean, a lot of them are trying to make that transition. I mean, you see DJs. Like Skrillex, I think, co-scored Spring Breakers. We had some hand in that movie Spring Breakers a couple of years ago, the James Franco film.
Mm-hmm. Spring Break, you know, forever.
Right. A director one day might want, you know, he says, you know, oh, I really like this dubstep track. I really want that. Mm-hmm. Who's the artist? And then they hunt down the artist and then have them write. Daft Punk, another great example, Tron.
Oh, right.
They did the score for Tron, and it was incredible. Mm-hmm. It was very much a Daft Punk. Like they weren't, you know, using strings, and they were paired with another legitimate composer, who had been in the game for quite some time, to help them along the way.
Did they come to the meeting dressed as robots?
Because I think so.
That would be amazing.
I think
they're not our clients.
They're contractually obligated to show up in those helmets every time.
Yes. I don't know if they have actual faces either. I don't know how that works, but...
They don't. Yeah, they don't. That's why they wear the helmets. It's
are their heads.
They got a Darth Vader thing going.
Yeah. And it's working. It's obviously working. So
yeah,
that's an example. Or, you know, you'll get like maybe like a rap artist here and there to come in and collaborate.
Oh, yeah. Like GZA does that.
Yeah, yeah.
RZA.
RZA, yeah.
RZA does it.
Did
RZA
you say
GZA? Yeah, the RZA, the GZA, the old dirty GZA.
Is GZA a person?
Yeah, man. Wu-Tang.
Oh.
RZA and GZA.
RZA's the one that actually, he's considered a composer in his own right.
He's done some stuff for Tarantino movies, I think. No.
Oh, I can't recall. He's, again, not our
like
client.
Like a presented by Tarantino.
Right.
Those types of movies.
Right. He's a collaborator of
Iron
sorts.
Iron Fist or something.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Man with the Iron Fist.
That's it.
Yeah. So it is, it's a weird, you know, directors think they want something, and then they hear an artist, and all of a sudden, it's I need Sigur Rós to score my movie.
Mm. Nice.
So yeah, it's a trend. It's a new thing, but it's certainly it's not uncommon these days to have an artist like that collaborate with another composer, or you know, just write a score on their own. It happens all the time.
Is it more often though that they're collaborating with a composer who's kind of done that part of it before?
Yeah, more often, because it's really a director saying, "Hey, I have this crazy idea.
Yeah.
I want X, Y, and this artist to come in and score." But then the studio, who's putting money behind this, or you know, producing it or putting it out and distributing, says, "I think not," and I'm going to pair them with someone who we know can do the job well. So that certainly is a fine balance there. But it's usually a paired up job. They do it together.
Nice.
More often than not.
I like that very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. That's pretty sweet.
It makes for some interesting collaborations.
Yeah.
Hold on. Andrew, why don't you ask me a question?
So how's your, what do you, I got nothing.
All right, hold on.
Did I just clean you both dry?
Stall them? No. Stall them for a little bit. No,
what's your take on Liam Neeson?
He scares me.
Okay.
He scares me.
All right,
I'm very intimidated.
You stalled him for long enough.
Great.
All right, you ready for this horror story segment?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's tell some horror stories. Here's the segment. Without
a doubt, the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Are you crazy? Or just plain stupid?
What the f*** are you doing?
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
All right, so this is called Horror Stories. This is a segment where you describe horrible things that you've witnessed. You don't necessarily need to have been the reason for the fuck up. You don't even need to say that it happened at Kraft Angle. It didn't. None of these stories happened at Kraft Angle, right?
Wink, wink.
So why don't you give us a little taste of just nightmares that you've witnessed?
From just from my job point of view or from a score
like it could even be like someone that you've worked with, like a composer telling you like, oh my God, I worked with this director. It was a total nightmare. You don't need to say the name of the director or the name of the composer. But just like what that nightmare situation was.
Yeah. Oh man, there are so many. Well, there's one, I have my own nightmare, which I'll share after, but I think the juiciest one that I can think of off the top of my head is a composer got fired off of a project, not too long ago because, he was talking shit about the director and accidentally BCC'd the director's assistant.
Oh, boy.
Oh, nice.
So that'll do it. Quickest way to get off a job. That'll do it.
Yeah, never talk shit on an email.
Yeah, it was a bizarre back and forth.
Take note, Amy Pascal.
Indeed, yeah. Written. Certainly.
Well done.
Yes, timely.
Well, yes.
Yeah, it was a composer emailing.
Not now.
No, certainly not anymore. Yeah, it was a composer to remain nameless, I guess, but emailing internally just with his own team about, you know, the notes that were given via a director. Again, a director not really knowing how to speak to a composer in musical terms. Mm-hmm. I need it light but heavy, I think was the quote from the director.
Oh, well, then he deserved to get
it. And it was a big, what the fuck from, can I curse on the show, by the way?
Yeah,
is that, okay, I didn't know if
you
that
could
was.
You even say it'd be like, it was a big suck my dick.
It was a big suck my dick. And yeah, so the director,
you can't
composer.
Just be throwing around sucking my dicks like that, especially if you're a director, like saying that to, like, you can't just.
I don't know if that was the quote. He didn't say, I don't think that was the quote via email. It was just like kind of like a, what the fuck is this guy talking about? He's on crack. He doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
Right.
And it was in a long chain of notes back and forth.
To do it.
And I guess he was trying to like hand delete all the people he didn't want it to see.
Oh, yikes.
And I think he missed a very important one, which was the director's assistant. And the next day we get a call and that was that. But so that was a big owie. And that's a big no-no. We typically just try to discourage that.
So for all of the early call timers out there, make sure to just start a fresh email if you're going to talk shit.
Yeah, talk
shit.
So
you could add the people that you want to add.
Exactly.
And then when Google asks you, hey, you sent all these emails, do you want to also add this person to this chain? Just be like, nah, dog.
Or even better, you know, if you want to really talk shit, pick up a phone. You know, call your agents. You know, we'll hear you out.
Or meet in person at a cafe.
Right.
Or a payphone.
Exactly.
Use a payphone.
If you can find a payphone, go to that.
You know what's great? I actually found there's a payphone in my neighborhood, and I actually saw someone using it.
What?
It was crazy.
Like living in it?
It was like,
must have been a drug deal.
I took a mental note of it, and I was like, holy shit, I haven't seen this in decades.
Wow.
But you know,
throwback.
That's not that's not really industry related. It's just about payphones.
Yeah. So that is certainly a horror story. I mean, that was, and then imagine the bridges.
Sounds horrific.
The aftermath of that, the ramifications that come of that are, you know, you'll never work for that director again. Relationship burned. Studio ties burned. I mean, it was a big deal.
Damn.
Yeah. So that was a big owie.
That's
not a fun owie though. But I have a couple fun ones.
But I mean, that looks poorly on the composer, not on you guys for representing.
No. It's
like that doesn't damage the craft angle.
No. In fact, we actually were able to salvage it by presenting another composer to come in and fix and step back in. So it not representing poorly on us, but it certainly. Yeah.
So you guys are problem solvers, not problem makers.
Right. Exactly. But we certainly had to, you know, give a quick slap on the wrist to the. To the composer in question.
Send a fruit basket.
And remind them that, you know,
is that a slap on the wrist?
Not to the composer, but to the director.
Yes, an apology basket of a cornucopia.
Yeah, put an iPod cakes. Nano in there.
Yeah, exactly.
What is this thing?
All right, a fun mess up.
And a fun, my own ones are usually the most fun.
Oh, nice.
So, again, most of my fuck-ups came from when I was sitting at the reception desk still trying to learn. I tell all, you know, up-and-comers in the industry or people who are just, whether it's an agency or not, anyone who's trying to find their way in L.A., especially some out-of-towners who are just kind of like moving here on a whim, trying to really make it in this business in whatever way, shape, or form, you know, you're going to fuck up every which way possible. And I recommend it also because everyone learns from their mistakes.
It's like messy, classic, make mistakes.
Yeah, it's the classic word of advice, but, you know, I certainly wouldn't know what I know now if I didn't fuck everything up at some point.
Right.
So,
because that's how it really gets instilled in you.
Like, yeah.
Nothing teaches you a lesson like sticking a fork in the outlet and be like, oh, don't do that again.
Right.
Crazy shocked.
Exactly. So one of my many was a fun one. My boss, the COO, who's also the HR money in and out guy, he was out of town on vacation while I was at the reception desk, and he asked me to keep track of all of the incoming client checks, the commission checks that were coming, you know, the checks for the clients and then subsequently the commission checks that we receive because we take commission on everything our clients do. Mm-hmm. My job was to cut a specific check for a client and mail it out. Easy, right?
Okay.
So I go to his printer, the check comes in, I print out the check, the right amount, everything's there. And then it's sitting at my desk. I had a tall glass of water on my desk. The check's all ready to go, all nice, neatly printed, perfectly done. Mm-hmm. I knock the water over, all over the check, spills everywhere. The ink starts running. I start to panic a little bit because I've never done that before. I didn't know what to do. And my boss is a bit of a hard ass, and I didn't want to like bother him on his vacation. So I just took it upon myself to try to fix this. So I took some tape, and I started taping the wet, very wet check together.
Oh, geez.
And then by hand with a marker, with a felt tip pen, I tried to rewrite by hand the client's name, the proper amounts.
That's the thing with checks. They can't look like they were tampered with.
It was looking pretty sloppy. Yeah. And then the routing number. The routing number was all ripped up, so I had to.
That's right, because I wrote a new routing number.
So I rewrote the routing number. I got another check. I rewrote
the routing number. You should be in prison for this.
I think this is a felony at this point. But
what's the statute?
So long story short.
More than 4 years.
So long story short, the check never goes out, and I kind of just sit on it till my boss gets back from his vacation. That Monday, he comes up and asks me, he said, hey, did that client ever get the check? And out from my drawer, I pull a very wet.
Still wet?
Still wet.
Still moist somehow. Somehow it was still wet.
Because you kept it in the drawer. It needs to air out.
I tried to dry it out by using a paper towel. So I was trying to like
you vigorously. You threw it like in a dryer?
I vigorously rubbed it with a paper towel. There were little rip holes. Oh, it was awful. I mean, there was white. I tried to white out like the bits that
holy crap.
Fucked up via ink. So it was like white out and
it's like this
ink.
One sheet of paper is now very heavy with all the things that you tried to do to fix it.
I stapled something at some point. Like it was really just like a panic mode of like, oh my God, I messed up
office
this check.
Supplies.
And like, you know, I really wanted the client to get paid, and it was like money's a big deal going in and out at a small boutique. You know, we really got to keep track of that. So I very embarrassed, you know, very embarrassed me opens up my front desk drawer and I pull out the very wet, the runny inked
a wet check,
a very wet, gross check, hand it back to my boss.
Literally a wet check.
Literally a wet check. He just looks at me, kind of shakes his head and walks away. That was the end of it. But it was
worse.
He doesn't say anything?
No, not a word
just
said.
Just shakes his head and leaves.
It was the I'm disappointed in you look.
Oh, no.
Which, you know, it's not the I'm not angry, I'm disappointed.
That's the worst.
That is the worst.
That's so much worse than like full on rage.
I almost wanted the reaming. I almost wish I got it instead. But no, it was the shaking of the head and the walking away. So. That will forever stick with me, I think.
Could you not just print it out another check?
You know, in hindsight, yes.
Okay. All right. I wasn't sure if
But I didn't know how to use the check printer.
You know, I was still pretty green and I had a lot of young fear.
Were there no other assistants there? You could have been like, hey, how the fuck do I?
I'm a prideful guy and I was a little embarrassed to be like
asking for
I super fucked something up. That's hard for me to do.
Right.
You know, even now. But I was still new at the job, so I didn't want to be perceived as like the guy who wets his checks.
Like, get a load of the new guy. Can't even print a check.
Exactly.
Out.
So it was, but you know, looking back, I mean, everyone has those little, everyone does that kind of shit. Maybe it's not a wet check per se, but it could be a metaphor for any other way of fucking up. And it's a good thing. And I learned from it and moved on.
It's a good metaphor.
I'm
wet
still
a check.
Alive. Wet a check.
You see this guy over here, wet a check last week. It was bad.
Yeah. You know, your mouth,
depending on that,
your mouth should not be writing wet checks. That your wet butt dry.
Exactly. With ink and whiteout.
Don't write wet checks if you ain't got towels, right?
Or whiteout.
There it is.
Yeah.
No, but whiteout still makes it wet.
It was very wet after that.
Yeah. If you cover the whole thing in whiteout dries pretty quickly, actually.
And then you could
just start over from there.
You know. If only.
I don't know.
If I could turn back time.
Yeah.
So, John, if... let's say for some weird reason, the people listening to this podcast are like, John's pretty cool. His job is pretty cool. I wonder how the hell I could get a job like that. What would you say phase one or any type of advice it would be for someone that wants to have a job like yours?
To work at a talent agency?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. Like I said in the beginning, you know, it is who you know. And it's connections that you – just random connections you may have.
So how do you know people?
Exactly.
I have parents that know people.
Potentially,
have friends' parents that know people.
The way I got this one was just, you know, a friend of a friend who just happened to work at, also be in the business working at Disney, and just a random connection who knew someone at the agency who was leaving. So send a resume around. It really is, it's trial and error. I mean, you have to kind of get a resume together. I would recommend, you know, internships that pertain somewhat to the job path that you want to go on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's music per se, like, you know, go intern at a management company, go get paid shit or not at all. You know, go be someone's bitch for a little bit. Really, that's what it is.
But beef up the resume.
Grind a little bit, you know, show that you're a hard worker, you know, be the first one in, last to leave, that kind of thing. And really, you know, work your way up and send the resume around and you're going to get rejected 1,000 times. I sent my resume. I can't tell you how many times I've sent it to CAA and William Morris because when I thought, oh, I want to be an agent and maybe something music related.
That's the place to do it.
Yeah,
right?
Those are the big boys. So, oh man, I just thousands of I can't even count. I mean, a ton of resumes all over town.
Right.
Sometimes they call you, sometimes they don't. And that's a part of it, you know. A lot of rejection, but, you know, when one clicks, grab it and, you know, make the best of it. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not the right, even if you don't know or think it's the right thing to be doing at the time, it certainly will, it's something for the resume. And it helps in the long run. It's a stepping stone.
Like our last guest, Stephanie Simmons, mm-hmm. She just wanted to be a host for like a news network. And the first job she got offered was something like in the HR department. She's mm-hmm. like, she doesn't know anything about HR, but she took it because she knew it was at the company that she wants to do stuff at.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because like even if it's something that you don't want, like if someone presents you with an opportunity that's not your finish line – gotta look at it as a starting line.
Exactly. Make the best of what you got. and go from there. And yeah, it's easy to get discouraged in this business too, especially if you're moving from, you know, if you're not from LA, and it can be tough and scary for sure. But it's definitely, if you have the grind and the tenacity to stick with it, it's worth it for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
With that, should we get into the game?
I think so.
All right. Well, I don't have an intro for this game yet. I almost started working on it.
I can compose one for you. Or we can get a composer to compose one for you.
Can you get Danny Elfman to make the fucking intro?
No.
Can you make it? We want it to sound white but black.
Right.
So
light but heavy.
Up but down.
Yeah.
Dark but light.
Silly but serious.
Electronic but a cappella.
Exactly.
Yeah. Digital but analog.
Okay. I can work with that.
So this game.
Loudly quiet. We could keep going. But.
We're not going to. So this game is called Red Light, Green Light Franchise. And the way that this game works is I'm going to pitch three movie ideas. I am like the head of the studio, mm-hmm. and you two are my underlings.
Okay.
So all for some reason the head of the studio is making is pitching these movies that he did not write. I wrote one of these. So I'm going to be reading these three pitches, and then you and Andrew are going to decide which one gets the red light, which one gets the green light, and which one you blow up to a franchise. Now, usually I do the reading of all these pitches, but, you know, there's a place that I get some of these pitches when I can't think of them myself. On Reddit, there's a subreddit called Pitch a Movie. Wow, your cat is just getting into the cupboard.
Yeah, he literally I watched him open the cupboard.
Do you want to go close that real quick?
I guess. I was going to make you a pie afterwards, but now he's been sitting in the, well, no, in the pie dish.
I'm so. Very well, allergic
to cats. I'll just keep on explaining why.
Yeah, okay.
No cat pie for me.
So so you guys will decide which one to red light, which one to green light, which one to franchise.
Okay.
Now, usually I'm the one that reads all of them, but this time, right, I get it off a subreddit called Pitch a Movie, and I found a pitch that I liked so much that I was like, I wonder if this person who wrote it will actually pitch it themselves, because they would probably do it more justice than I would.
Mm-hmm.
So tracked the guy down, got his number, and we're going to try calling him right now.
Okay. Now, is he going to pitch it and then hang up? Or, I mean,
I literally have not discussed any of it with him.
Because I'd be embarrassed if it's a real red light.
Yeah,
I tell him
that's
that.
That's my concern.
He's not going to listen to you guys red light it.
Okay.
He's just going to make the pitch, and then we'll hang up
with
him.
Hang up.
And then you guys can tear it up if you want.
That's what I need to know.
That's great. Ooh, that's exciting.
Is it going to be better than the chair movie? Because that was...
Yeah, this one's legit good. Like, I legit really like this one.
Wow.
Although I do want to hear about the chair movie at some point.
Ooh, it was an animated. I think it was called Chairs, the animated movie.
Yeah, Chairs, the animated movie.
A la Cars?
Who did we do it with? Was it Ben? Ben Kasu? Was it that one that we did it with?
Yeah, it may have been.
No. We did a soundbite game with him. Fuck it. Aviv. We did it with Aviv Rose.
Yes.
I'll find it.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so we're going to try calling this guy who we'll just refer to as Cashew Gallery. Because that's his Reddit name.
Okay.
I hope this works.
Are you going to say hello? Is this Cashew Gallery?
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, I've been texting with him.
Oh, okay.
I wonder. Okay, I'll turn some shit up.
There we go.
Hold on. Is that the right? That's not the right one. Do that one.
This one? Just fucking do it. Just turn everything up.
Hello?
Hey, is this Cashew Gallery?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Can we fucking hear him? Hold on. Hold on 1 second, dude. Maybe we'll just try speaker.
All right.
Hey, man, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, that's better. Yeah. Okay, so we're over here at Early Call Time. You are live with us. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this. How's your day going?
Not too bad. You know, typical Saturday.
Wonderful. Okay, man, so we're sitting here and we're waiting to hear your pitch. Are you ready to pitch it?
Yeah.
All right. So the floor is yours.
Basically, what I had an idea of is it's a monster movie, but the focus is after the monster attack. It starts out in kind of a nuclear reactor just after the attack. You don't see the monster. You don't know what it is or how it goes about its business. But the story and the plot is all based off of scientists working in this nuclear facility, they wake up after the attack to see there's been some kind of containment breach, and they've got to hurry and shut it down, or there's going to be a meltdown. And it's the entire conflict and resolution goes completely spiritually with 12 Angry Men. It's kind of plot-driven or dialogue-driven and based completely off of their communication as they attempt to fix this problem and make it out okay. So it's kind of different from most monster movies that focus on kind of the attack itself, whereas this would focus on after the attack, which you don't see too often.
I've never seen it. I think I fucking love that pitch, man. So great.
Thank you.
Cool. Well, Cashew Gallery, thank you so much for... oh, wait, hold on. Do you have a question for him?
What kind of score would that need?
What kind of score are you seeing for that movie?
I haven't thought that far ahead.
Okay. Any actors attached?
Probably very minimalistic. I really just want to focus on having everything driven by the dialogue and the performances. Kind of like 12 Angry Men. It'd be very similar to that in steel. Hopefully. But I'd really have to go back and see what they did there to kind of be inspired by it.
Okay.
But I would think kind of minimalist.
Awesome.
Got it.
Sweet. Cool. Do you guys have any other questions for him?
I don't think so.
Sounds great.
Cashew Gallery, you are the man.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for doing this. We'll talk to you soon, maybe. All right, bud. Thanks.
All right.
Cool. Well, that was the first time we ever did that. Hopefully the audio came up.
Yeah.
All right. So that is Monster Movie Without a Monster.
Mm-hmm. So it's the aftermath of the monster attack.
Exactly. And okay. They're trying to prevent a meltdown.
I'd give that the green light.
Hold on. Let's wait.
You got to hear all three.
You haven't heard all these.
We're waiting.
Don't make the decision until you hear all three pitches.
Oh, my fault. Okay.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves here, John.
Ooh. I got excited.
Okay, so this is actually... Okay, this next one is mine.
I was hoping he would say that I need a light but heavy score. that was my hope. But.
You were setting him up, but this isn't live, and there's no way he knew that's what we were talking about.
I know. Wait, we're not live?
Okay, so this movie pitch is based off of a movie that I made with Brian Freeman in high school because we were obsessed with Christopher Guest, and nice. We made a Christopher Guest-type movie about curbside painters that paint the address
numbers.
They paint the numbers.
I think I remember this.
First of all, I want to see this movie.
Yeah, we have.
Badly.
I think he found footage of it. Like, it's pretty... I haven't seen it, but we still need it. We need to watch it again. So, with that in mind, here is the pitch for Curbside Paint Job by Nadav Itzkos.
Are we calling Brian to get him on the phone for this?
No.
Okay.
Brian's not a great pitch guy.
No. He's no Cashew Gallery.
No. Yeah, he's no Cashew Gallery. Holy shit, by the way, I can't believe that he was so cool doing that. That was, whatever.
He's scratching his head right now. Like, what?
He's like, what the fuck was that? Who the fuck are these people? This guy just hit me up on
Reddit. Was that Hollywood calling me?
Okay, Curbside Paint Job by Nadav Itzkowitz. A classic tale of good versus evil, personified through two rival curbside painters in competing for houses in the same neighborhood. Okay, there's some typos in here. The quarter is about to end and sales are down. This is a career-making summer for Honest Steve from Honest Steve Paint Jobs. He remembers back to a simpler time, a time when he and his current rival were partners. But before even that, student and teacher. Honest Steve taught Kirby Kirkbride everything he knew, how to make the perfect stencil, the perfect distance to keep the spray can, how to keep the paint from running, all that kind of stuff. But that all changed after the accident. Things were never the same after the accident. The biggest change was those who were once friends are now enemies after the accident. Kirby branches off into his own business and takes all of Honest Steve's clients as well as expanding to other towns. It was this last summer that Honest Steve has to figure out how to bend the rules to send a message, as well as to take back his business. Will he make it? Will lessons be learned? Yes.
That is quite the log line.
Mm. Well, wait.
No, this isn't a log line. That's,
you know, we'll just, leave that for the audience.
That's one of those, like, in the script, just, you know, insert improv here. One of those deals.
Oh, I thought it was going to be some epic, like, he lost his arms, and so he had to paint with his feet.
Yeah, something. You know, back in the day when they had lead in paint, it just corroded his fingertips off.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which
is a period piece.
Lends to the perfect. Yeah, it's a period piece. Okay, good, John. Okay, this next one is really fucking stupid. It's a
great preface.
Are you at all biased?
I'm not gonna say who it is, but all I will say is I ambushed someone and told them to give me a pitch, like, right then and there.
That's frightening.
And this is the product of that.
This is not from Reddit?
And I wrote, no, this is from someone that I know. Where they were very tired. They were about to you know, leave and go to sleep. And I was like, hold on real quick. Can you pitch me a movie? And they're like,
Well, I got to know who it is now.
So
can you make up a screen name?
I'll tell you after we stop recording, because he purposely did not want people to know that it was him. I was like, no one knows who
you are. So it's a guy.
So it's a man.
Or her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay. And I'm going, as they were saying it, I wrote it down as words were coming out of their mouth. So that's the pitch. And this movie, this pitch is called Stickers and Spiders. And that'll make sense.
I'm in.
By the end of this pitch.
Green light.
Okay. Franchise. I'm going to try and deliver it exactly how he said it. Here we go. What about a superhero whose power is... Are you writing what I'm saying? A superhero whose power is... He can... I don't know, dog. Is this going to make it to the podcast, dog? A superhero whose power is stunning the ladies? No, that's not good. Or, you know what? Scratch that. A documentary about all the things people eat accidentally, like stickers and spiders.
Okay.
So a documentary.
Wait, how do you accidentally eat?
Say, for example, you're eating a fruit and you forgot to take the little sticker off. And so you just eat the sticker.
I would so watch that. I really
would. A documentary
would.
About stickers yes. and spiders?
Yes.
It's a I great would be name sad for the documentary,
riveting.
Right?
Riveting.
Okay, guys. So those
with
are
a
the,
great score.
Those are the three mm-hmm. pitches. Yeah. Monster movie without a monster, curbside paint job, ooh. Or stickers and spiders. Go.
Oh, man.
Which one do you red light? Which one do you green light? Which one do you blow up into a franchise? And remember, just because I like certain pitches more than others doesn't mean that you have to like, oh, well, he likes this one more. We should franchise that one. All you guys need to do is make convincing arguments for your decision.
Yeah, you said that before.
Your opinion has no sway on me.
Good.
It
should, because it won't go well if you don't
agree
with
them. Yeah,
good,
because I'm the one that decides if you do.
Oh, well, okay.
But, I mean, you know.
Is there a point-based system here, or do we just...
The rules still aren't clear on how to win this game.
Right.
And never will be.
Okay.
But you get a letter grade from me by the end of it by how convincing your arguments were.
You know, I gotta say, I like the monster idea. I think that's an interesting take on a monster film. Mm-hmm. I've never seen an Aftermath monster film mm-hmm. without a monster.
And also, you can add stuff to any of the pitches, like, you know, I would attach, you know, this score to that, or
sure.
I would attach this actor.
I would definitely use Danny Elfman.
Okay.
Well, I think just to touch on the curbside one real quick, the curbside painters, mm-hmm. I think if it was a Wes Anderson-esque type of film,
okay.
that might work.
Okay. All right.
That's all I got.
My thing is, I love documentaries, but I, in terms of making them, you know, if we're talking like feature, like Michael Moore type status documentaries.
This isn't going to be No Bowling for Columbine.
I just, I like the idea. I think it's more of a, you know, a learning channel series or.
Like a made for TV documentary.
A one off. Yeah.
Are we talking stickers and spiders?
I love the idea. I don't think it's going to fly in theaters.
No, that's
okay. I think theatrically.
Literally no one will see it.
Has any documentary made a theatrical release that did well? Exit Through the Gift Shop?
Yeah. I mean, every once in a while.
Indie darling.
Right.
Yeah. But you're never going to, you know, you're not going to make Spider-Man money or any.
I've never seen a documentary blow up into a franchise. Have you ever seen a documentary have like a sequel and a prequel and like a trilogy of
trilogies?
No,
because it's a documentary. It's over.
March of the Penguins do pretty well.
Was that a documentary?
Also, Cocaine Cowboys was a two-parter. They had a one and a two. About the cocaine scene in Miami in the 70s.
Well.
Oh.
It's a really gruesome. It's a gruesome twosome of movies.
I like gruesome.
You like
twosomes? I like twosomes. Yeah, I do.
Can't. Well, you guys should watch it together. Back-to-back double feature.
Literally sitting back-to-back.
Yeah.
Yeah, double duck.
That one for me would be a red light.
The stickers.
Documentary.
Yeah, that's. I'm also red lighting.
Stickers and spiders. Heart's broken. Yeah. Okay.
Red light.
Okay. So red light on stickers and spiders.
Here's my thing about the monster thing. I know that this is not zombies, but I think of when I watch The Walking Dead, part of that is almost an aftermath in a way, because it's you had this big outbreak, and it's sort of now these people are surviving in the outbreak.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that relates to anything. I'm just thinking out loud.
Just thinking out loud. Okay. Well, let me know when you want to contribute something.
That was sort of a contribution. Okay. Contribution? Mm. You put the wrong emphasis on the wrong
What if
syllable.
The monster was Nazis?
No. Do you really want me to go down that road?
I'm just
Do you want to have a conversation?
I'm trying to direct you down that road. All I really want you to hear from you is you yelling, "I'm not a Nazi." That's all I want to hear.
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to say it.
That's right, because you are a Nazi.
Right. So,
wow. No. Sympathizer, at least, right, guys?
You should see my tattoo.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Wow.
Whole back piece.
This is getting super uncomfortable.
It's like your Red Hot Chili Pepper tattoo, but with less lines.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Interesting.
Wow. Let's...
Go ahead. Show
okay,
the
tattoo. One of these.
Like that. Oh.
But just...
A little bit more elbows, too. A little
right.
more
right.
lines going.
Twists.
More, some more right angles.
More right angles, there, yeah. Wow.
I am not a Nazi.
Okay, so which ones... Okay, so stickers and spiders, red light.
Red light.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry to your
I
friend.
I still haven't heard which one you're green lighting, which one you're franchising.
Does it have to be... Can I red light something else?
No.
No, I have to... It's one of the three.
Yeah.
So the red light for the stickers,
There's
sure.
have to be a red light, a green light, and a franchise.
I would green light... I would green light the... I would green light the your curbside one. Okay. I would.
That's how I feel.
With a proper director to give it a good vision, with good... Maybe like a Bill Murray type.
Okay.
As a lead?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And like maybe the Young Apprentice would be
well,
like
Wes
a...
Wes Anderson is attached as director.
Bill Murray's going to be in it.
It's guaranteed.
Yeah, it'll be quirky.
Yeah.
Hackman,
I see like a very
quirky... Gene Hackman versus Bill
Ooh.
Murray.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Nice. Unless you want the Young Apprentice to be like a Jason Schwartzman.
There you go. That's the other option.
Yeah. Because I could see him doing this.
So basically Wes Anderson is doing
it's
this.
It's a Wes movie. Anderson film.
Okay, so it's a Wes Anderson
film. Yeah, we'll call him.
They're all wearing...
With Christopher Guest tendencies.
They're wearing tracksuits.
Yes, yes.
I could see tracksuits.
Exactly.
I don't know why.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Yeah, so I think your franchise is the monster movie.
And then the monster movie.
You have so many places you can go with that.
Yeah. Well, Cashew Gallery, congratulations, bud. Give me your address and I'll send you some sauerkraut.
Yeah.
That's the prize. That's usually the
So
prize
you're in agreement.
So there is a prize?
What's happening?
You know, guys... I think this might be the first time that I completely agreed with every single one of your decisions.
Nice.
And for that, A-.
More hamburgers.
Interesting.
Room for improvement. Not the best, but definitely not bad.
Not the worst. Not the worst.
Well, not the worst. There's been worse.
There's definitely been
worse.
Yeah.
There's been flat out.
I heard Brian's. It was pretty
bad. Did you hear the one with the Dolph Lundgren biopic?
No. Okay. Sounds really exciting, though.
Well, they didn't franchise that one.
No,
that
we
was,
didn't.
That was something that
Absolutely
I
not.
And,
Dolph gets bad rap.
I still really want to make that movie. Maybe I will. I just need to know someone that looks like Dolph, because Lord knows I can't afford Dolph. Well, guys, thanks for listening to Early Call Time. Yeah, I redlined over there a little bit. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, whatever.
John, if people like you, if say, you know, you said, you know, you don't know if, you know, you're going to be doing the agency thing your whole life. Mm. If people are like, yo, John, I got this great fucking career option for you making guitars or making songs with guitars. Are you on Twitter? Are you on Instagram? How can people get at you?
They can get at me. Yes, I have an Instagram. Mm. It is rarely checked. Mm. I do have the Facebook.
The Facebook.
Mm, the Facebook.
Yeah. John Clark.
Jonathan.
Jonathan Clark.
It's my work name.
There you go.
My professional name.
Send him a message. Hopefully you won't go into the other inbox.
You're the only Jonathan Clark on Facebook, right?
There's about 72, I think, last time I checked. So good luck.
The Studio City area.
John is the Aryan looking one.
Yes. Although very Jewish.
Very Jewish.
Mazel tov.
Oh, yeah, look at the nose.
They can't see it on a podcast, but the profile picture.
They can hear it, though.
They can hear it. Oh, they can. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm sitting in a room with three cats, so allergies
no,
are...
No, you always sound like this.
Do I? Okay. Thanks.
Cool. Well, with that, thank you, everyone, for listening. John.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for
Thanks
coming.
For coming.
What a jam.
Yeah,
this
man.
Is great.
It's been a pleasure having you on. I learned a lot about being a music composer representative.
Yeah.
And being a music composer in general. If you guys have any more questions. Oh, yeah, by the way, I figured we should start doing this. If any of you guys have movie pitches that you want us to read during Red Light, Green Light franchise, go ahead and send it to earlycalltime@gmail.com, and I'll read them. Other than that, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, go to earlycalltime.com for podcasts and blogs, blog action from me, Andrew, and JJ. And you know what? I'm going to say this right now. Guys, I have finally come on Twitter with my own handle. First time ever. I'm 26 years old.
Wow.
And you could follow me at Very Nadav Show. VeryNadavShow.
Nice.
Very Nadav Show.
Well, congrats.
I know what I'm doing later.
That's right. If you guys like dick and fart jokes, you guys should follow
me. Yeah, your Facebook wall alone.
Yeah, that's what I realized. I'm like,
some, you know, interesting stuff on there.
I could get a wider audience.
The thing about going outside and then what with the dog coming and barking at you. Sure,
yeah, so I was outside on a cigarette break and I farted and I was completely alone. 5 seconds later, a dog comes up and like for like
some, I read this
for
read
some
this
cuddles. Thing. And so my butt is a dog whisperer.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, I think so.
That's your franchise.
You know what's crazy is that in 2013 was a bad year for my butthole. And it's like, you know what? If because of that, now every time I fart, dogs like come for petting action.
Worth it.
Diverticulitis isn't that big of a deal, guys. There's a silver lining. Huh. And with that, thank you for listening and listen to the outro. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at Craft Services and you want more? Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.